my name is Amy and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 8th, 2016. So I have a little over 6 years of being clean and sober. Yeah, that's actually for my higher power because I never imagined when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I would stay sober. I'm a firm believer. I have a predisposed to alcoholism. Genetically, my biological father, he is one of us. He is not his. He's still the same as our other family members that are also alcoholics as well. Where I came from, what happened when I was growing up, this was always going to be the insult. You know, I like to drink alcohol because I like the way it makes me feel. You know, I don't like to, I don't really like to feel my feelings, and I like to check out, and alcohol did that for me, you know, and it worked for some time. And I've never really been able to drink without any type of consequence. I've always had some sort of consequence while I was drinking and using. And, you know, I was first introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was in my early 20s. I'd say it was in 2004. And I knew that I had issues with other alcohol-like substances. However, I wasn't able to see that everything started and ended with a drink at that time. I was not able to see that at all. And when I was going to meetings, that's all I was doing. All I was doing was just going to meetings. And I would go to 3 meetings a day. I was going to this fellowship. I think it was called Murphy's Fellowship out there at Shop in Iwawa. And I can't remember anything that was said. I just knew that I didn't want the life that I was living when I was out there doing the things that I was doing. And we read it, I think Sam read it when she was reading in More About Alcoholism, where we have to concede to our innermost self that we are an alcoholic, and I hadn't done that when I was 22 years old. I was still romanticizing the idea of alcohol. I still had reservations. And my very first sponsor basically told me what we just read on page 30, that I get to go out and practice some controlled drinking. And I was so offended that she would say that to me. But she was absolutely right. You know, I got involved in a relationship with somebody that was not in the rooms, and all it took was for him to tell me I was too young to be an alcoholic, and I told him he was right. By the end of that relationship, you know, he was already screaming at me that I'm an alcoholic, and I already knew that. And I remember saying, well, I told you. When I first met, I told you, blaming it on him. It was his fault that I started drinking again, right? But it wasn't. So, and then I stayed out for 11 years. You know, at 22 years old, I didn't have a lot of things happen. You know, I hadn't been fired from every single job. I hadn't had a DUI. I didn't have broken relationships. I didn't lose friendships. I wasn't on the verge of my family basically cutting me off. And I don't mean cutting me off financially. I mean offering me that emotional support. They didn't want anything to do with me. I was not there at 22 years old, but when I came in at 33, I was there. I came in, I didn't have a car, I had a DUI, and I'd been fired from every single job, and I was bartending, you know, and I kind of had my favorite, if you can't beat them, join them. I was bartending at this little dive bar called Slicks, and I told myself, you know, when I started working there that I was going to be around people who drank like me so that way I can see how they are and how I don't want to be like them, but in reality, I would get off at 7 p.m. and then I would go and close down the bar. You know, and by the time I was marching there, you know, my drink of choice was Jameson. I was a Jameson neat person. I didn't like chasers. I just liked it straight because I just wanted to check out and just get it done, right? And while I was bartending there, they would only order a bottle or two a week. And when I started working there, they were ordering cases. So that just goes to show how much I would drink at that bar, and I would convince others, my customers, to drink the way I drink so they can buy me my drinks. I was very, very good at manipulating people. I was just thinking right now, I only have one DUI. I got that DUI in, I can't even remember, in the early 2000s. But technically, I should have about 4 or 5 DUIs. I was able to talk myself out of DUIs all the time. my most recent one was toward the end of my drinking. You know, a lot of people, I hear a lot of people talk a lot about them bottoming out, having that one bottom, like that one moment during their drinking that just was done. For me, it was more like a year, kind of bottomed out in 2015. I remember, you know, I tried to do this self-imposed sobriety because I was not coming back to AA. AA did not work for me. But keep in mind, at 22 years old, I was not working steps. I was just calling my sponsor just to complain to her, like basically throw up in her ear. And I had no concept of God at all. I thought, who the hell is God? And I'm bigger than God. Those were my thoughts. So I was going to do it on my own. And me doing it on my own, me trying to control it was, you know, doing what I call self-imposed sobrieties, where I wouldn't drink hard liquor, but I would drink non-alcoholic beer. You know, have a little bit of alcohol. And I would do that, and I would do other substances to change the way I thought and felt about myself. That was what I was doing. And so I found myself coming into the rooms of AA in August of 2015, and I told myself that I was going to just put down the alcohol because that was my worst vice. But everything else is okay. You know, everything else is medicinal. It's a prescription. It's okay. And I was so miserable. I don't know if anybody in here rides horses or not. I used to ride horses when I was younger, and I felt like I was like a horse chomping at the bit that really wanted to just take off and gallop, and just like, and that's how my alcoholism felt. But I was just trying to control it with just a little bit of smoking this, a little bit of, you know, having a pill or two, or, and it didn't work. So it was only a matter of time before I went back to drinking. And I was actually coming into rooms, and I was sharing at group level. I was telling you I was sober. I was taking chips. I was chairing meetings, and I was high. That's what I was doing, because I didn't think that any and all substances I need to stay away from, any mind-altering substances. So that's when, in one day, when I picked up the alcohol again, and this is in 2015, I lost my job. My roommate didn't want to live with me anymore. I lost the boyfriend. And it just lost everything all in one day. And so I decided that's when I decided I should start bartending so I could see how other people drink and what it was going to do to my life. And that just, I'm describing this because I just want to say that I had so much denial. I was in so much denial. I didn't think my drinking was hurting anybody at all, you know. And in December of 2015, you know, that when I was saying how I was able to talk myself out of DUIs, I remember having a cold. And keep in mind, I didn't even have a car at this time. I was, like, renting vehicles to get me to and from places because I thought, I don't want a car because I'm just going to drink and drive. And then something definitely is going to happen because I was notorious for drinking and driving. So I was in a rented vehicle, you know, taking cold medicine at the bar, ordering hot toddies, driving all the way out to Singer. And I knew that I was going to fall asleep behind the wheel. And so I just parked in the residential area and I passed out. And when I came to, I hear this, you know, and cop with a flashlight. What's going on? You know, you've been passed out here for hours and you're blocking this person's car and they had to call us or their driveway. You're blocking their driveway and they called us because you're passed out. Are you okay? Have you been drinking? No, I haven't been drinking. Are you sure you haven't been drinking? I'm positive. I'm sick right now and I have a really bad cold and I took cold medicine. And I had to come out here because I had to get my prescription for my glasses. Just this whole sob story, right? And the older cop was like, this girl is lying. But the younger cop was like, hey, what's up? I know you. We went to high school together. I was like, oh, hi. And then the younger cop tells the older cop, hey, no. She's telling the truth. She's telling the truth right now. She's not drinking. And it was because of that I was able, they called, you know, my parents and said, hey, you know, your daughter's in this vehicle. She's not feeling too well. She took too much cold medicine. Can you come pick her up? That is, I manipulate. I can talk my way out of things. And that's how I was able to talk my way out of that last potential DUI. So my last drunk was on Super Bowl Sunday. And prior to that, you know, I was just in that downward spiral where I was drinking every single day, nonstop. I would wake up in the morning and I would be shaking so bad that I wouldn't start to feel better until my hands would not calm down. Like, my nerves wouldn't calm down until I could start drinking. But I was just so sick. My body was so physically sick from drinking that I was, like, shoving the alcohol down my throat at the same time while I'm dry heaving. And I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I just needed to get a couple drinks in just so I can make it through the day, right? And so one of the last times, couple weeks before my higher power got me sober, I decided to take a trip out of town. And I was always that person that was always trying to chase the next thing that was going to fix me, whether it be a guy, whether it be a self-help book, whether it be, you know, exercise, something that was just going to help fix me and kind of make me feel whole, if that makes any sense. And so I had taken a trip down to L.A., visiting a guy. He was going to be the guy that was going to fix me because he was sober for 5 years and, you know, and I was going to control my drinking from this trip, you know, and I show up at his place. He had my bottle of liquor, you know. That trip didn't go as planned, and I was really trying to control my drinking then. And I got pissed off, and when I was driving the Grapevine home, I was chugging a bottle of Jameson. And a blackout drunk, weaving in and out, in between the semis. I stopped off at that Chevron to get rid of the bottle because I didn't want to get in trouble. Again, I'm in a rented vehicle. And then I stopped off at a bar in Tulare, a bar called Slicks, ironically, and because I needed more liquor. So a trip that took 2 hours to get from LA to back to Fresno took me 10 hours. So I came to when I rear-ended my dad's truck in his driveway at their home in Selma. And, you know, even then, I couldn't even admit that I'd been drinking. Even then, you could smell it off of me. And my parents were like, you know, you've been drinking. I said, no, I haven't. No, I have not. Like, yes, you have. I took a pill. And this pill, I don't know. Well, what pill did you take? I don't know. You know, it was just this constant, like I was constantly lying and I was constantly in denial, you know. And so that night, you know, they take me back to my place, and the next day my dad, you know, showed up at my place, and he basically told me, you know, this was in January of 2016, he basically told me, your mom and I are scared that we're going to bury you, and what is it that we can do to help you, you know. And I said, there's nothing you can do. He's like, right, can't you just stop? I said, I can't stop. Look at my hands. They won't stop shaking. I cannot stop. And my dad said, you know, Amy, I'm getting to the point where I can't be around you. I can't watch you do this to yourself anymore. Because we're gonna bury you. And I said, I don't know what to tell you. But can you give me a ride over here to this gas station? I'm meeting somebody. I'm meeting a friend at this gas station. Can you give me a ride? And so he did. He gave me a ride. I waited, watched his truck leave, and I walked down to the Dakota Club, which is the Yule Star, right there at Dakota Blackstone. And so basically what I'm trying to paint that picture, you have that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, right? I have that, you know, when I was driving drunk on the Grapevine. I could have killed somebody. I could care less about killing myself, but somebody else, you know, affecting another family. And I just was doing the same thing over at the bar the next day, right? So because I had come into the rooms in August of 2015, I met this woman, this wonderful woman named Lucia G, who became more or less like my mentor. And she would talk to me. She wasn't my sponsor, but she would talk to me. And I remember back then, you know, I'd be rolling a joint, talking to her, smoking weed, you know, doing all that stuff. And but I called her that day. You know, I called her after that incident, and I was just crying. And I was just telling her, I can't stop drinking. I don't know what to do. This is what's happened. What can I do? And she said something to me that nobody had said to me. Maybe they had said it to me, but I couldn't hear it then. But she said, can I pray with you? Can I pray for you? And I said, yes. And she said, okay, I want you to get down on your knees, and I'm going to pray for you. And we were in my bathroom, or I was in my bathroom on the phone talking to her, and I was on my knees, and she said this prayer of basically, you know, for God to do for me what I couldn't do for myself and to help me to become willing, to be willing to get clean and sober. And I just remember just crying and hoping that if there was a God, please help me. And that was a little, that was somewhere between the last week of January. It was the last week of January. I can't remember the exact date. And I know about 2 weeks later is when I got sober. And so when I woke up the day after Super Bowl Sunday, I just remember thinking, I have that moment of clarity where I finally realized that my drinking wasn't just hurting myself. Because I had that thought of, this is who I am. You just need to accept me. My drinking is not hurting you. If you don't want to be in my life, then fuck you. That's your problem. That's it. I don't care. I'm not hurting you. But I was hurting every single person that I came into contact with. And, you know, I had that moment that morning where I realized, like, holy shit, my drinking had negatively affected somebody's life who wasn't my mom, my dad, my brothers, my sisters, you know, outside of my family unit, right? And I remember, you know, I was opening up the bar, and every time I would go and open up the bar, I would always play music. But for some reason that day, I really started praying. And I really started, like, asking God, I don't know why I just got emotional, asking God, like, if you're real, like, can you please just help me? And just help me. And then something clicked, because I had been going to the rooms, you know, for that brief moment of time, when I had put down the alcohol, but I didn't put down the other substances, and something clicked where I was thinking, oh, I should call the other women and ask them, maybe they can help me. So I called 5 women. You know, I have these numbers for a long time. You know how women, you get numbers and you're just like, nah, I'm never going to use it. That's kind of what, how I felt, you know, but I actually picked up the phone and called women. And I called, I just called them, and my message was basically like, this is Amy. I can't stop drinking. I need help. Please help me right now. Like, call me back, right? And so one of the ladies told me to call CAP Recovery. And CAP for, is a recovery place in Fresno, and they have county beds. Because the thing is, I did not have money for treatment. I didn't have insurance. Whatever money I had at the bank, I was not going to invest in my sobriety, because I thought it was a bunch of BS. That was what I was thinking. And so I didn't have money. Even though I did have money in the bank, I didn't have money for treatment. And so I started this, like, talk, right, to God. And I was praying to God that I wasn't even sure I was believing in on that day. And I remember one of my customers, he was one of my regulars, he came in and he said, Amy, can I talk to you for a minute? And I said, yeah. And his name is Phil. And he would literally order maybe 1 or 2 beers, if that, and that was it. And he said, Amy, I just feel compelled to tell you that right now you're in this situation of like, you're in like a spiritual warfare. Like, you, there's something going on. I can't tell what it is, but if you stay in this place, and he was talking about slicks, it's going to eat you up alive, and you're not going to come out. And I was like, okay. And I'm thinking, I'm so hungover right now. I have that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization that I have felt for the duration, for so long, that hit in my stomach. Something needed to change, and I needed help. But he said that. I just remember him saying that if you don't leave this place, you're never going to get out of here alive. I said, okay. So then I started calling CAP, asking if they had a bed available. And I talked to this gentleman named Joaquin. And I talked to him several times, because when he told me he had a bed available, I told him I needed to think about it, and I'd call him right back. And then I was in the bathroom, and I was praying, and I was wondering if I was going to go into treatment on February 8th. Or if I was going to wait until February 15th, because that was when payday. And then I would have, like, a week to work and, like, scrounge up my tips. I'd squirrel away my funds and then get a good paycheck. And then I was going to be serious about it. Like, I was, like, basically at that crossroads that we read about. You know, it was at that jumping off point. And luckily I heard that voice tell me that I wasn't going to make it. And that really stunned me. Because me not making it, I've always made it. I always made it work. But in that moment, I thought to myself, I remember asking myself, like, if I could imagine staying out, drinking and using the way I was for 7 days, and it just felt like hell. It felt like I was, like, in hell. It felt like an eternity. And I remember saying, all right, God, I'm trusting you. And that was the first time I've ever had, like, a sacred surrender. And that was the first time I've ever let go and let God. I didn't even realize it at that time, but that's what happened. Like, in retrospect, when I look back at all the stuff that lined up for me to get to that moment, that was what happened. And I remember one of my regulars was there, and I remember I was leaving the bar that day, and I called my parents and said, okay, I'm going to go to treatment today. I need you to give me a ride, and I need to go down to get medically cleared to make sure I'm safe. They need this paper. But I remember one of my regulars basically said, hey, Ames, you want a shot? I was always wanting a shot. I was never going to turn down free liquor. And I said no, because I knew that if I had taken that shot, whatever I was feeling about wanting to go down this path was going to change, and that somehow I was going to convince and manipulate two people that love me to not take me into treatment. So I said no, and I walked out of that bar, and I never went back. And, you know, sobriety is a freaking journey, man. It is the journey, let me tell you. Oh, man, when it took me until I was 18 months sober to even be like, holy shit, I am insane. I never thought I was insane. I thought, oh, every time people talk about the step two, that God could restore us to sanity, right? Which is implying that we're not sane. I didn't think that applied to me at all, right? And so it took me 18 months sober to be like, you are insane. But early sobriety, I just want to talk a little bit about early sobriety. So I think for me, it was really, really tough. It was really, really hard. I went to meetings a lot. You know, when I was at CAP, they told me that I needed to go to a meeting the same day I left treatment, and that's exactly what I did. I went to the Sunday 9 a.m. meeting at Fresno Fellowship, which was at the time one of the biggest meetings, and it's very, very intimidating. I introduced myself, and I didn't want anybody to talk to me. I would walk in, and I would wear a hat to cover up my face because I didn't want you to look at me. I didn't want you to talk to me. No, I don't want to be your friend. And then I remember I had other paraphernalia at my place, and I remember I didn't trust myself alone with it, so I asked, you know, my mom to come up with me while I gathered all of it, and I just, like, gave it away, and I couldn't be alone. Couldn't be alone. I felt like, because my whole life at that point, up until, you know, I was 33 when my higher power brought me to the rooms, my whole life revolved around alcohol. That's what I did. You asked me what my hobbies were. I didn't have hobbies. I partied. What do you mean my hobbies are? I go to bars. I drink. I do drugs. I'm the life of the party, or so I thought, right? And so when alcohol stopped working for me, because I have this physical allergy to alcohol, that anytime I just put a drop, I want more. I just want more. I don't know when to stop. I don't want to stop. And then I start to mentally obsess over it, about when I can get, when can I drink again? So I felt like I was suffocating in my skin. I felt like I couldn't fully breathe. And I cried a lot. Meaning, I was that person that you called on, you'd probably be like, she's just going to freaking keep on crying. I just, like, would sob, like, nonstop. And I remember going to a meeting, and I know Michael, I was there. And I was my first 30 days. I went with a gal, maybe I was over 30, I can't remember. I went with a gal, we both had the same amount of time, we both met at CAP, and we became insta-best friends, you know, and that's what happens. And she was so happy. This girl was so happy. They called on her, and she's like, life is good, I'm happy, and all this stuff. And they called on me, and I'm like, life is not good, I am not happy, I'm upset, I'm crying, I don't know what boundaries are, I'm really, really scared, I don't trust myself, help me, you know? I was a mess, is what I'm trying, the picture I'm trying to portray. But what happened was, luckily, you know, I did get a sponsor. I got sponsors immediately, and I say sponsors because I'm not on the same sponsor that I had when I first came in. My very first sponsor, she worked a very thorough 1, 2, and 3 with me, and I was able to see the disease of alcoholism, like a threefolded disease of alcoholism, how I have that physical allergy that once I put that drink into my body, it activates that mental obsession, that craving where I want more, and I just mentally obsess about it, and I want more, I want more, I want more. So I have that physical allergy, that mental obsession, and then also I am spiritually bankrupt on the inside. I am spiritually maladjusted within myself, right? And so finding a higher power, a God of my own understanding, is what is really has kept me here and has kept me clean and sober. Because I cannot be self-reliant. Because when I'm running on self-will, I'm running the show. I'm running my life. But when I take a step back and I allow my higher power to go in and use me to help other alcoholics, to be of service, and I feel like I can be whole again. I don't know if that probably doesn't make sense. I don't think I said it right. But so I started switching sponsors in between my 4th and 5th step, something I would not recommend because when you're doing that, my experience, when I was doing that, I was miserable. Again, 18 months sober, barely realized, holy shit, I'm clean too. So I was super, super unhappy. I was super, super that irritable restlessness and discontent, that was me at almost 2 years of sobriety, you know. And I started working with another woman who took me through my 5th step. And, you know, she listened to my 5th step. I was in my first 5th step for 10 months. I would not recommend that. 5th step is meant to be dropped in a day. And there's instructions in the book, right? So at 4.5 years sober, I was completely dry. I was sober, hadn't put any kind of mood or mind-altering substance in my body, but I did not want to be here. All the feelings that I had while I was out there drinking and using started happening in sobriety. I've heard people in the room say that they get homicidal, I get suicidal, and I don't necessarily have a plan, but I just don't want to be here. I'm just not happy. On the outside, my life looks good, everything's good, everything, you know, but on the inside, I'm just depressed and I'm miserable. And that was my experience at 4.5 years. And so I knew something had to change. And luckily, I was still communicating. I've communicated with my higher power through this whole process. There's some moments in my sobriety where I'm just super connected and I feel so, so great. And then there's some moments where they're just small, like little mini conversations. And I'm not really carving like a lot of time out for my higher power, but higher power is still there. So luckily during that time, you know, I was praying to my higher power and I said, please help me because I don't want to drink and I don't want to kill myself. I don't want to feel this way. Help me. And the thought came to reach out to this woman, this other woman, and ask her to read the big book with me. And now this other woman, she is spiritual as fuck. Every time I would see her, she would always want to talk to me about the steps, and I did not want to talk about the steps. But I knew that she had read the book line by line, word by word, and had a spiritual experience, one that I had at that point, 4.5 years. So I called her up, and I asked her if she'd be willing to read the big book with me. She asked me, well, you know, isn't your sponsor going to read the book with you? And I said, I've already told her, I've already asked her, and she's talking to me about emotional sobriety and Blaine Butler. I don't know who the hell that is, but right now I don't know how to find it and I need help. And she said, okay, I'll be willing to read the big book with you. And that was in 2020, in August of 2020. Since then, I have read the big book line by line, word by word, because what happened was I basically stopped at page 60 and then was told, do this and do that and do this and do that with sponsors, right? And I'm not knocking any of the women that said yes to sponsoring me because I'm a handful and they really, really, really helped me. They were really helped me and they were real instrumental and I'm so excited and grateful to them. But I had to get down to the actual basic text, the simple program. What does the book say? And I had that experience. And as a result, my life is so different today. You know, I like to bring up too, that first promise of hope is on our title page, where it talks about how 100 men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And then, you know, as you read the literature, you know, our basic text, which is basic and simple, it talks about the simple steps they take in, which are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so it's just like I have instructions on how to start my day, what happens when my day gets awry, and then how to end my day, right? And so because I have done that, and I'm continuing to do that, I have seen this revolutionary change in my attitudes, my ideas, and my emotions. That sometimes I take a step back and I'm like, I don't even recognize myself. Like, who is this person? And that's what that spiritual experience is for me. That's been my interpretation of what that spiritual experience is, that spiritual awakening. My reaction to life is different today than what it was when I was 1 year sober, 2 years sober, three, and it's going to continue to evolve. And I also have this moment too, I have to share this, I'll share it, where I felt high. I had this like spiritual high, and I don't know if anybody else has ever felt it, but I felt super, super high, like so spiritually connected to my God, and it's way better than the drugs and alcohol, right? And because I have felt that, I want to feel that way all the time, right? Because I'm an alcoholic, I want to feel good all the time. So when I'm not feeling good and I feel a little off, I'm like, holy shit, I'm spiritually disconnected right now. What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? But the reality is sometimes I wake up and I don't feel good, and that's okay. It's just learning to walk through my feelings, live through my feelings, not worship my feelings, and know that they're going to come and pass. And I have to continue to work at it. I get my time is up. So I do want to point, I have a favorite line in the big book. Oh my gosh, I'm one of those people. I do, because I think this is like, I just love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's on page 14, our Bill story. And I just have to preface this by saying, I did not like Bill's story when I first got here. I could not relate. He's a white man, and he, it was a snooze. It was like a snooze. It was a bore for me. I could not relate, right? But I've had to read it a few times, and I've had to look at it, you know, and underline, like, okay, did I drink like that? Did I think that way? All that stuff. But it's ironic that my favorite line from the big book is from his story, because I hated Bill's story. But it says, in page 14, it says, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and lows what's ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Their faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. So what this line tells me, if I must perfect and enlarge my spiritual life, how am I going to perfect and enlarge my spiritual life? I'm going to do it through work and self-sacrifice for others. And why am I going to do those things? That way, when those low spots, those certain trials happen, I will be able to survive them. It's not saying if it's going to happen. It's saying when it's going to happen. So I must continue to live in that. I must continue to enlarge my spirituality. I must continue to say yes when I want to say no. I must continue to sit up and show up and be honest about where my life is at today and what's happened since it's been there. What's happened for me to get there? Because hopefully, you know, whenever I'm asked to speak, I always ask God to just use me to touch at least one person. If I touch at least one person, then I know that my higher power is definitely in the room and working. So I'm going to close with that, and we'll call on people.
Great. Awesome. It's time. Thank you. Yeah, that was fantastic. So we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We like to hear from as many different people as possible. So please just limit your sharing to allow everyone a chance to share. We have a number of people here in the room as well as people, thank you, online. So we'll go back and forth between those different groups. This is a list of the people that are here in the room and then our people online. And you can pick on whatever you choose.
How about Sarah E.?
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for sharing this strength and help. I appreciate it. I really relate to you when you're saying that you stay near your life today, like it's totally unrecognizable, like you're like, is that for me? Because like, I was so lost, and like, any, like, year and a half ago, any time before I asked me, I would tell them why I was a victim, and like, why everyone needs me to make me be an alcoholic, and why my life was so bad, and today, like, I'm actively working a program with an amazing sponsor, and I'm just sharing what she has taught me, and sometimes I have some women that come into my life, and they're asking me or for help, and the things that come out of my mouth, like, after I see them, I'm like, where did I get that from, you know, like, I'm amazing myself, too, you know, I'm so grateful, because I was in a place where I was like one foot in, foot out. I was never fully committed, and I finally came to alcoholism. Now I'm high school 10 months of sobriety, and I was dedicated, and I fully surrendered, and I'm just the life I'm living today. God put me in the path, like, to put people in my life that guided me to my sponsor, and I can, like, sit back and see today that, like, he was literally just guiding me, like, he had my shoulders, he was like, this way, you know, and I really believe I am where I deserve to be, and I'm just so grateful, and I'm grateful that you were able to share that with us too.
Thanks, Sarah. Julian?
Julian,
I'm on. Okay. How about Kirsty M?
I'm still listening to
you. Oh, okay, it's fine. Let's see. How about Sal?
Bill, thank you for opening the doors. And Amy, thank you for hearing the message. Could relate to a lot of it. It's good to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with like-minded people. I'm extremely grateful for your service. So yeah, I mean, I showed up here broken, same program you came out of, you know, and I showed up there with the shirt off my back, you know. I too was not only broken on the outside, but I was spiritually disconnected, you know. I didn't have, I was trembling on my own self, you know, in every aspect of my life, like I was failing, you know. And, you know, I too, should have only took me 2. But one thing I wanted to say was, it stuck out, was like the spiritual warfare. You know, I had that same conversation. I'm like, get help or you're going to die. You know? I was beaten in a deep state of submission, you know? It for sure was the last, these rooms were the last house on the block, you know, pretty much, and I'm grateful for those times, because it got me to reach out and ask for help, you know, and I started growing each step as I started putting in the work, you know, and then sanity for me, like, didn't return automatic. I didn't even have a spiritual awakening out of that. All I knew was that my life was getting better, and it was a hell of a lot better than that bridge where I go, you know. And then, slowly, submitting to the program, I started seeing different aspects of my life, like, not only, like, being more... I wasn't so far disconnected on my sanity, you know. I started getting a little bit of wits back, you know. And, because for me, like, sobriety is that balance. You know, you also brought that up. Like, I don't like that high. You know, I don't like the low lows. You know? I like that complete serenity where I'm riding that wave, you know. I'm fully content with just being okay. And that's the... That's one of the promises tells us, you know. And today, like, my life, like, isn't perfect. It's a hell of a lot better than it was. I get to not only have I related to you where you stopped at page 60, and then this, like when I learned that, you go on a little further on the bottom of page 62, and it says most good ideas are simple. And through that, you'll go through that trial and error. But I didn't even know what the freedom was until we after that, and you started thinking about stuff like, you know, you have a new employer. Ever so powerful. Those are the type of things, those are the type of gems that I started with. You know? And this is a guy that showed up with nothing. Broken. I lost contact with my higher power. You know? And today, like, life is completely good. You know? And I say that with gratitude and grace. It's good to be in the Vaishalaya, man. I haven't been in the Vaishalaya since Akipal, and it's always good to come out here. And you know, I know that I'm in a room of all walks of life. You can go anywhere and hear the same message. Thank you again. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Scott. Somebody from online, Matt H.
Hey Matt, are you there? You may have stepped away.
Okay. How about Leah W. from online?
My name's Leah. I'm an alcoholic. I'm kind of barbecuing with my kids right now. But thank you for your share. I really, really loved it. Everything about it, I loved it. That did make sense. about the insanity, it definitely made sense. And then I also identify with that high. I get that high every Wednesday. Every time I go to the Valley Group, I get that high. It's my home group, and I know that feeling. And some days it's hard, really hard. But I always just look forward to that day whenever the week's hard, really hard. Yeah, I really love your share. It was wonderful. You really talked a lot about that insanity, you know, and sometimes I feel like I just need to hear that, you know, just to remind myself of my insanity, you know, and yeah, so today's a good day, and just gotta get back to barbecuing for these kids, so thank you. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Sorry, D. Sorry, I'm an alcoholic.
That's correct.
I love you. I really enjoyed your share. I like how you mentioned, like, you know, the big book, like, it changed your life, but, like, reading the book, like, page by page, line by line, which your sponsor. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got my sponsor, and, like, we were going to the big book. I remember sitting on the couch thinking, like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck is the part of me and the fuck affects this before and all the shit, right? But later on down the line, like, when I really got an understanding of, like, my powerlessness, the unmanageability of my fucking life, like, the fucking insanity, bro, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and more about alcoholism, it talks a lot about insanity. I've grown to have such an appreciation and gratefulness for that because I needed it and I didn't even fucking know it, you feel me? And so, like, I'm so forever grateful that God put my sponsor in my life the way he did, because, like, she took the time to do that, and now I'm blessed with the opportunity to do that with women, too, you know? And that high, fuck yeah, that high the shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I go to a fucking meeting, and, like, I hear good shit like this, the fucking message, like, this is where it's at, the fucking, like, in the book. It's not there. You feel me? Like, yeah, I hear it's good and all gravy and all the shit, you feel me? But it's in the book, and the book is where it's at. Because in the book, that's where I find me. My fucking twisted way of thinking. Because my thinking is fucking twisted. Bitch, like, I just didn't even do it yesterday. And then, like, my ego and my pride and my fucking jealousy will twist that shit up, and I can't even enjoy the fucking moment for what it is, you know what I'm saying? But, like, you know, with the writing and the work and everything, I get connected with God, and, like, you know, I'm able to set that aside and bring God in and make God big and me small. My fucking twisted thinking, all that shit small. Like, I mean, I only have that because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, listening. So like I said, like I have sponsees that I work with, and like it's such an honorable being. Like I remember when my sponsor told me that it was an honor working with you, I was like, this is a cop of shit. Like she's saying, cop of shit. Like,
but now that I'm experiencing that, I'm like, this is right, yo. Like, she was right. Like, it is. That's such an honor to see someone's, like, eyes wide up. Like, whoa, like, that was me. Like, I was insane. Like, I was fucking doing so much and sacrificing so much to continue drinking. And I wanted to stop, and I couldn't fucking stop. I remember looking in the mirror, like, bitch, you need to stop. Like, when are you going to stop? And I just couldn't. Like, it didn't matter that my kids were knocking at the restroom door for me to come out. Like, none of that mattered. And it didn't. Like, it did not matter. None of it mattered. And so, like, I'm very, very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have the connection I have with my higher power today. Or just the gratefulness, too. Like, I love it. Like, in my life, completely, it's changed from, like, a year ago. Like, no why. And I, too, feel me myself, like, wow, I'm like, who are you? And it's dope as fuck. It's a dope ass experience. Oh, yeah. Thank you
for calling me.
Thanks, Victoria.
How about Sam B?
Hi, Sam. Hi. So I think, I hear a lot of people say, like, the rooms for the last house on the block. For me, it was, like, a beacon of hope in the distance, because I was already homeless. I don't really care how many houses are on the block.
Okay, I can just hit anywhere or
anything. But I had a different upbringing, you know. I was like a missionary overseas, and I was a Sunday school teacher. I was a single mom, so I knew that there was life aside from what I was doing, but I had reduced myself to such a low standard that, like, the excitement of my day was like, let me show you what is breaking on my 10th this morning. That's like my favorite Bible verse. And that was okay for me because that was where I was at that point. And you know, I have three children that I raised by myself and kind of disconnected from. And I was the same way. Like, my addiction doesn't hurt you. I mean, how can it hurt you? I'm literally never around you. And that was my thought process. Like, if it's hurting you, then you are making all that shit. Because I'm not around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, come to find out that was, you know, in my case, worse. Because my family doesn't have me. Type of experience, really, like alcoholics or drug addicts too much, and so you gotta think everything they see on TV, they're like, she's not drinking that. I'm like, no, it's not you, I'm just crying in a tent for 4 years straight. And you know, I was self-referred, I went to New Visions here in town. And by the time I got there, you know, I tell people, have you ever seen like a stray cat walk up? You can tell they've been straight out for a while. They're kind of up to me or eating. I don't really care. Like, that was me walking into the door. Like, I remember I had called in for like a month and a half, and the insanity in my brain was like, I was so desperate for change that I remember sitting in a group of people and just drinking and doing other things and being like, well, hold on. Hi, this is Sarah. I'm just calling to check in. Okay, thanks. But I made sure to check in every day because I wanted to go to rehab, but then I came up and just picked right back up where I was. And everybody's looking at me like, what are you doing? Like, trying to change my life. I got desperate. That's where I was like, you know, I was getting mad. Like, luckily I'm stubborn. But for the most part, when you're in your addiction and you decide, like, I don't want to do this anymore, it's like a fleeting thought. They're gonna just call in every day and I'm just stubborn enough that I'm like, I bet I'm calling you okay. And I got to where I was like, I'm tired of doing this, so I went in, and I remember I must have looked like such a mess walking in. I had a shirt on that said the dopest. Yeah. I was laying out of my car. And I remember saying that, and it was later that night, it was like hours after I had already talked to them and told them in Friday night. And it was like hours later that it hit me that when I told that lady I live in my car, she was like, I could tell. What did you mean by that? So when you hit that hour later, I'm all mad about it. But, you know, when I finally did my intake, and I napped for like 4 good days, and I came in, and I was so emotionally just bankrupt, and I was like desperate for anything that you were trying to give. So I remember sitting in my first NA meeting, and I think I was reading like How It Works or something. Like nothing like emotional at all. And I was falling, just uncontrollably sobbing because it was like, I'm like in an NA meeting right now because I need to be just my life. And that was a really hard realization to come to. But, you know, I initially had an NA sponsor, and we were doing, I don't know if famous for this, the handouts. They give you the How About questions, and I got over it to, like, I was starting step four, and I was like, I don't know anything more about myself. I know that I have all these papers filled out. And I call her, she reads the question, I read my answer, and we move on to the next one, but I don't feel like I've learned anything aside from what she wants me to answer on these questions. I can kind of figure out how to manipulate her into thinking I got the right answer. And so, somebody told me about the primary purpose meeting, and I ended up being a primary purpose sponsor, and I was the same way going through, like, who needs the full words? You know, when I started working with this one thing, that's when I saw, like, hey, this actually matters. It wasn't, like, for me, it didn't mean anything. I just, you know, my sponsor's just trying to get me to do what she wants. And once I read it with somebody else, it stuck. And, you know, I can say now, like, I'm barely in, like, chapter three with my sponsor, and I know more about myself and my insanity and my higher power than I ever did going through my little handouts, which it works for people, but it doesn't work for me. I'm sure it works for other people. But, you know, I heard somebody at Musicians say that you're only going to get from this program what you're willing to put into this program. And that hit me. I overheard it as I was walking by. They weren't even talking to me. I was just like, do you know how obnoxious it was to call you guys for a whole month and then have to, like, pack up on myself, start my car? But it was a really big inconvenience to me, so I'm not going to get the bare minimum from you. I'm going to give you everything I got because that's what I expect. I'm all super extra, so I was like, I'll be vice president, I'll be helpful, I'll be your manager, I'll do this. And then, but that led to, like, okay, you know, hitting up Leah at the Wednesday night meeting and being like, hey, what can I do? Like, what do you need me to do? And we need a greeter. All right, that I will be here 30 minutes early, and everybody's getting greeted. Twice if you walk out to smoke, you come back in. And then, you know, as soon as I saw the opportunity, I was like, okay, you guys are having a chit chat. What's up? I'll do that too. And, you know, and that's where I find that, you know, this was really that beacon of hope for me because my entire life I felt like a background character. Me being around was more of a burden than anything. Like, when I walk into these rooms and there's people who are like, oh, hey, it's not Mario. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And it's a good feeling. It's not something I've ever had before. But more importantly, like, when I walk in, I'm like, I like it. So, you know, and that's something I've never done before. I've never enjoyed being around myself before. And
How about Craig B. online?
Are you with us, Craig? Not to unmute yourself. Maybe we'll come back to him.
Okay.
Nobody online is getting their card signed today. How's that?
Mike G.
That was a joke, by the way. Don't anybody panic.
I wasn't going to poke it.
Oh, now I'm wondering.
You there, Craig? Oh, okay. Mike.
My name's Michael. And so I think for sure, Amy, I thought to myself, if any hold on me, what am I going to share? And I thought about the conversation we had before, and we also had it at dinner tonight. And but so when I'm drinking and I'm drinking, I got a lot of ice cream. You know what I mean? I sure would be nice to put a Raider game. And I'm a NASCAR fan. You know, it should be nice to go to a NASCAR race. Or, you know, it should be nice to go to Vegas. Or it should be nice to, you know, buy some Christmas gifts. Or it should be nice to go to the Pope. Or I wish I could go to Seattle. Visit my... So I got all these thoughts and dreams. But when I'm drinking and drinking, I'm not doing any of that shit. I got no money for any extracurricular except for my rights. And so one of the blessings, one of the gifts of sobriety is not blowing your money on alcohol and drugs and actually having money to actually do something. My person's gift, I was sharing with some of the members at dinner that it wasn't until I got sober that I bought Christmas gifts. Christmas gifts was like, Christmas wasn't for me. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just, I didn't participate like that. You know, do stuff with my mom, take my mom to the coast. Like, I've thought about it. Yes, you're gonna never. I've done that several times. Everything I just mentioned, I've been able to do. You know, because, that's right. Because I'm not throwing my money away on drugs. My cars, I would always buy like 2 used tires at a time. And my cars never had air conditioning. What? $180 for an AC pump? I can't afford that. And I got the same job. Well, I just recently lost my job, but I've had the same job for 20 years. Making pretty much the same amount of money. But when I'm drinking and drugging, I don't do any of that stuff. So I just love that about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I get to do this other stuff. I have dinner with friends. Like, I'm not having dinner with friends. I can't go. I can't afford it. I don't have money for that. You know? So back to Amy. Amy's been wanted to be a nurse for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say that.
But she's never been able to meet.
Yeah.
Fulfill that goal. Fulfill that dream when she's drinking and drinking. Mm-hmm. But now it's Riley. Amy is going to college, is going to school to be a nurse. Yeah, so I normally, you know, look at me like maybe I'm taking my kids to the coast. And you haven't been able to do that. You have all on drugs. I'm telling you, man, I'm on drugs or drug addiction. It takes more money, you know? And so, just being able to be able to do it. And, you know, that's just, we often don't talk about that, right? We talk about the spiritual gifts and the spiritual principles and serenity and all that's great, you know what I mean? God. But there's a lot of other good stuff to be having in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. You know, like road trips.
Mm-hmm.
Love you, Amy. I'll keep calling
you.
Thanks, Mike. How about George? George Pete.
I'm George. I'm out. Hey, George. Hey, Chris, being that stuck out to me is about something cool about cat and stuff. I like that with cat. So, and then sitting here listening to everybody's put into the group and meeting stuff that makes me reflect back to about 4 years ago when I was homeless. And, you know, on drugs and alcohol, and had absolutely nothing. And nobody had anything wanted anything to do with me. And I was going through this spiritual battle. I could feel it. I was like one of those guys that you see screaming. Well, I was doing that too. I was telling God I screamed out, if you're ready to help, you know, help. It's like this time. I remember the sun was breaking on the freeway. I was like, wow, this is just crazy. And all of a sudden, like, I said, hey, man, I'm done, man. I said, I can't win. I know you feel it, done. He took me out to Oakland. Where I knew I could get to a program out there, and I feel like it. Get away from all this, the free drugs, the free alcohol, the free, you know, just all the stuff out of here. And, nothing could absolutely do what I want to do. So, anything I want to do, I would be able to do. I mean, it's just wild. And I sit here looking at my life, it's just Are you kidding me? So I am super grateful. I'm very, very, very thankful. I'm coming up on my 4 years of sobriety on the February 5th and February 16th, my 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in that little period of time, I do well. Let me say that. I do certainly. And I thank my higher power, and I thank everybody. I thank for, groups of people like this to talk about stuff. You got to hear, maybe somebody here in the first 30 days or the first 60 days, or somebody question what this happens, and now can you check it out. You might hang around long enough, we won't be looking for like this. So, that's it. George, thanks, sir.
Thanks, sir. Michael L.
Michael, good job, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, the honesty, the share, and I appreciate Bill's story too. I wasn't much for the book when I first go around. I used to smoke back in the 90s for a couple of years here and there. And I always like to go to meetings, but that's all I like to do. I didn't like to read a big book. I didn't like to listen to anybody. I don't want to be of service. I don't want to hang out. I want to go to picnics. I want to be your house. I want to be your friend. I just want to go listen to some bullshit, war story. And that was pretty much it. And my first sponsor told me that if all you do is stop drinking and shoot cocaine, your life will be. And that's all I did. And my life got better. And then it got so good, I had to drink and shoot cocaine. For the last 2 decades, I haven't drank for years. And throughout the time that I've been in Apostle, I'm such an active reading and living a good book of Apostle. There's 11 chapters devoted to the program of Apostle. And there's 11 chapters, and it starts with the uncle story. And goes on, there's a solution from the alcoholism. We acknowledge this kind of words. In the action, the two wives, the first time you're going to two wives,
how am I going to read that?
Why would I be two wives? But you guys are going to be able to all aspects of the program of alcoholism. Because I may never get married, I may not be a wife, I may not have a wife, but if I'm trying to help an alcoholic suffer, that's a life. I might be able to help them if I understand a little bit. So I read that one too. Then the family act, to the employers. And today, I'm an employer. Wow. I'm sure about that sometimes. I got to come up with 10 grand this month just to pay my guys to work for. How am I going to do that? How often I think about that ever? You know, because I'm an alcoholic, all tripped out. Oh shit. Then how am I going to get 10 grand at the end of my meetings, guys? And every Monday again. Every Monday again. He just got that for me where I can't do myself. He gave me a way out. I took the way out. As a result, I'm not a 506617-097. I'm not a T506617. I'm not a number today. I've been in jails, institutions, special places, in a long time. And every once in a while I get a phone call from someone like George that's desperate enough to get into action, to ask for help, then I can help them help themselves. Then they have like a kid that's like George. It's amazing. I would have said, he was like, I have a bad. Because I'm like, dude, don't get my pool, bro. And, less than 4 years later, guys, it's amazing. And that's how it's not nothing I do. And what I do, what my sponsors instruct me to do is don't feel like that. Alcohol is not what I suggest, but alcohol.
Is it Pasquale? Kenny.
It's Kenny. I'm on the line.
Hey, Bill.
Dave, I don't know this other guy's
David.
Amy, thank you for reading your story. I really enjoyed a lot of it. Even though I'm a guy here. The most thing I was thinking the most was Crossroads. And then spiritual experience. I've stumbled a lot. I've been in and out of rehab for the last 3 years. And it seemed like I've had a few crossroads that really stick out something to me. So where if I would have chose wrong, I would find it. The last one, specifically, it was a crossroad and then a spiritual like experience that came with it. And I was on a train coming back from San Diego, and basically everyone knew I relapsed, and I couldn't stop. So I told myself, like, just do everyone a favor and just leave. And I stay on the train until it stops somewhere and I have to get off, and then just disappeared. And that was like, I just living somewhere else and not telling anyone or dying. Because, I was spiritually bankrupt. And after being in the program for a little while and getting a spiritual, really start having a spiritual connection with my higher power, once I lose it, it wipes me out. The shame and guilt is so great that it is for me, I can't stand it. So while I'm having that thought, I get a message from a guy that's in the program and inviting me to one of these pyramids. I have social anxiety. I don't really like to do pyramids. I'll show up a little late and a week early, kind of sneak in, sneak out, find a little bit of the crowd that maybe I know a little better. But on this one, I would say 30 seconds of me thinking about this is the end, I'm giving up. I get this message from her. And I call my wife, or text her, and so I said, I might have a chance. And before I went on this trip, I remember looking at my wife when she was on the bed, and I'm trying to pretend I'm sober, but I'm not. And she probably knew that. And she said, I just pray a man comes in your life and trust me. And I leave, I go on this trip. This trip was only like 24 hours. So, like, right after that, I sent this message. So I'm done. I think I'm going to die or feel like it for sure. And then I get a message from this man. So I call her and tell her I have hope now. Like, I have hope because in that moment, I remember what she told me before I left. And I know what I was thinking in that moment, and then I felt that my higher power sent this message to me. So I made a deal with her right then that we're going to go to this picnic. And I'm going to ask this man to be my sponsor. So long story short, I go to the picnic, and then, like normal, my disease starts talking to me. And I'm like, it's busy. I'll call him later. I'll leave. I don't want to bother him, right? She said, "Oh crap!" So I did, and then I even lied to them, asked me how much time I had. I made up a number of 4 days. You know, it was my first. I had 1 day of sobriety. I did not drink or use after I messaged them that day, but I had already used that one. So I'm saying that because for the first time, like I actually wanted to get a sponsor, and then my disease was like, no, man, you can do this like all the other times. All the other times, I was like, I don't have to do this. I don't have to read the book. I don't have to go to meetings. I don't want to do those things. And then once again, I'm about to make that stupid decision again. I have other people in my life that stop me from making that mistake. They asked me if I was willing to do the work and to carry the message. And then he said something about getting in the middle of the pack, and I remember like, all right, what the heck does that mean? The next thing you know, I'm like traveling and going to meetings. I am like, I have more consequences, you know, like my drinking.
It's several DUIs, it's cases, it's everything that didn't happen before I got here has happened. And then, so basically what I'm saying is I have a lot more consequences. I have a lot more reasons to be worried. I have a lot more stress. And once I started working with them and they started teaching me and we started reading how to do it, basic and genocide were right. It basically started lifting my spirits because now I have faith. It's not perfect. It's a work in progress, but I do know that it's a night and day difference than when I was two. And I'm hungry for it. Like, I want to continue to want. I believe all the things I've heard in the last few years today. So I do appreciate you. Thank you for being the service.
I'm afraid we're just about out of time, friends, so we're going to wrap it there. The Develop Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and to stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If anyone is in need of